south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, a couple of things about gringo prices. You know, the other day, I was in a little town called Antigua, Guatemala, one of those rare UNESCO World Heritage Sites, so naturally, you're going to get gringo tourists through there all the time. And you know, I don't like rubbing elbows with tourists much, but luckily, this little town of about maybe 20 or 25,000 people is visited most exclusively by people who want to learn their Spanish. They've got a ton of Spanish schools there. And the rest, well, they fall into two categories. The tree-hugging, kind of naturalist types, who I call grown-up gentrified hippies who now have some dough to travel. Mostly nice, free-spirited, adventurous types. And thankfully, they don't bring their kids, so you rarely see entitled, whiny first-world kids glued to their devices. Though you do often see well-behaved Latin school kids in their school uniform. That's a shocker in itself. Kind of like a blast from the past, you know? And the other maybe 10, even 20% of gringo and expat tourists, well, they're the do-gooder NGO types. Coming in for a couple of feel-good weeks, building solar outhouses for Jesus. You'll probably see them on your plane when you fly into these countries. They're easy to spot. They're pale and pasty white and have identical church group t-shirts. Sometimes, and I've witnessed this myself, they'll spontaneously break into a kumbaya sing-along. I have to admit, it's contagious. I've helped Michael row the boat ashore a few times myself. Yep, all it takes is an out-of-tune guitar and a Bible and you've got airplane karaoke. You know, I poke fun at these guys, but they do have noble and lofty goals. So anyway, I was hanging around Antigua, Guatemala for a day, sitting in the Central Park. They've got a very cool Central Park. That's the best place to people watch, you know. Except for the fact that now that the gringos have arrived, the locals with all their trinkets put on the hard sell. So there I was sitting on a park bench, and two lovely middle-aged gringa ladies sat down maybe 4 feet away on the adjacent bench. And in no time, we're surrounded by a group of indigenous ladies trying to sell them junk. Oh, and the gringo ladies, you could tell they were first-timers, were commenting how cute they all looked in their little indigenous clothes, especially interested in the tiny infant kid strapped to one of the ladies' backs, looking wide-eyed at everyone, but not making a sound. And she had two more quiet little kids at her side, and they couldn't have been much more than 3 years old. So you'll see a lot of these indigenous ladies are dragging their kids with them. Some have found out by hook and crook their kids can be marketing tools. How cute. You know, it tugs on the old gringo heartstrings, right? However, if there's one thing I have to give those ladies credit for, these kids are happy and you rarely hear them cry or make a fuss. Their moms really have them under control. They don't interrupt, blurt out things, or demand stuff. They're nice and calm, hanging with their mom while she's working. And that work, of course, is to sell trinkets and junk to tourists and gringos. So anyway, these two nice gringo ladies, I didn't know them from Adam, sat down on a bench next to me to take a load off, and suddenly they're surrounded by indigenous ladies and their kids, shoving all kinds of textiles and jewelry in their faces. All right, now for a quick lesson in bartering with the natives. I must say that if you show the slightest bit of interest in anything these ladies shove at you, if you don't make a deal right then and there, you'll never get rid of her. As soon as you get up and start walking around, going to a restaurant, check out a spectacular ruin or a church, you'll turn around and there she'll be, shoving that thing in your face again, throwing a new and lower price at you. So it is best if you're interested in something to buy it right away. However, if you do that, it's a signal for all the other indigenous ladies standing around that they have a chance of getting a piece of your pocketbook too. Of course, where there are gringos, there are dollars, and they'll learn those specific few English phrases necessary to keep the sales game going. And once you've bought something from a competitor, another lady nearby, or you're just not interested in trying to nix the deal, they'll use the two old standbys I've heard over and over again. Number one, you bought something from her, now you have to buy something from me. Well, you know, life ain't fair. And above all, they should know that. I mean, look, they see the wealthy gringos rolling into town, wealthy in their eyes anyway, dropping a $5 tip on a tuk-tuk driver just for bringing the bags to the hotel desk. We do that in a town where $5 could be a half a day's wages. So really, we're to blame for screwing up the economic order. Another reason why I vastly prefer living off the tourist trail. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that gringos have ruined Antigua, Guatemala, but they're on their way to doing it. Still, it's nothing compared to places like Costa Rica and Panama. In fact, I say it's more like Costa Rica was 25 years ago. So there's really no danger of it turning into present-day Costa Rica, not in my lifetime anyway. All right, so I mentioned you don't want to get too excited about any trinket they're trying to sell you, and if you do, you better buy it right away, or you'll be permanently shadowed until you buy something. And then, after that, all her friends gathered around trying to sell stuff will try to get a piece of your wallet, too. Now, I'm not even talking about a lot of dough here, as opposed to Costa Rica, where things are much more expensive and priced in dollars. So I was there watching what was going on with those gringo ladies, and I thought I'd help them out a bit. Soon enough, one of the little indigenous ladies with a papoose on her back pulled out some jewelry, and one of the gringo ladies just fell in love with a pendant. You know, to me, it was just a necklace made of fake plated silver. They called that fantasía in Spanish. Fantasía. Spelled in English like the word fantasy, because that's what it is. A fantasy. Fake. Oh, yeah. With a colored rock hanging from it. Sure, it was a nice colored rock, highly polished and such. And when the gringo lady said, how much? The lady said, 120 quetzales. That would be around 15 bucks. Such a deal, huh? And man, these gringo ladies must have been fresh off the plane, because the lady dug right into her wallet and started flipping through her funny money, counting it real slow. By the way, you really know you're on the gringo tourist trail when the little ladies selling that junk give you two prices, one in the local funny money and one in dollars. Anyway, that little necklace with the rock was quoted in the local funny money, so you know the place isn't truly contaminated yet. Anyway, I turned to the lady and said, do you know any Spanish? She said, no. I said, well, you know, you're supposed to barter with them a little bit. They expect some of that. Then she said, yeah, but 15 bucks. I could never get anything like that up in the States for 15 bucks. Look, it's handmade. I said, you really like that thing, huh? How would you like four of them for 15 bucks? And she said, what? I said, watch this. I turned to the little indigenous lady and said, four for 15 bucks. And she acted like I stabbed her in the heart. Then the haggling started. It went on for a few minutes. I wouldn't budge. And guess what? She ended up getting two of them, because she didn't want four, for $8. Of course, I did the dealing for her. And funny enough, by this time, there were a couple of other gringos standing around watching the whole thing go down, along with a couple of college-age Latina girls, you know, with backpacks, smartphones and stuff, looking on. And after the whole thing was done and the gringo ladies patted me on the back for cutting such a good deal, one of those college girls came up to me and said, you know what? You're good, but not that good. In Panajachel, which is by that famous Lake Atitlan region in Guatemala, she said she bought the exact or nearly the exact necklace for, get this, $2. So that's right, these little indigenous ladies will gouge you. Why? Because gringos don't barter. It's just nickels and dimes to them anyway. Plus, these poor little indigenous ladies are hauling their little kids around with them, and it looks, well, so sad. So that feel-good moment when the lady got two for $8 was kind of overshadowed by the Latina who said she could get one for $2, meaning two for $4. And obviously, the indigenous ladies selling those things are still making money at $2, or why would they sell them for that? But that's not all. When you're sitting in the Central Park in a place like Antigua, Guatemala, or in any Central Park in any town in Latin America, there are plenty of shoeshine boys that'll come up to you and say, hey, lustre, lustre. And when you look at that word lustre, it looks almost exactly like the word luster in English, as in a brilliant polish or shine. Now, you know you're in a gringoized or kind of touristy area when the shoeshine guy walks up to you and says, shine or shine, meester? Off the tourist trail, man, there's no gringo, so you'll never hear those guys say that. By the way, people often ask me, Johnny, is there a quick and easy way to tell if a destination you're going to is on or off or kind of on the gringo tourist trail? Without actually going there and seeing it for yourself? Well, there's two easy ways. Number one, go on the internet and see if they've got any English language tourist rag. I'm talking about some very nicely done monthly glossy ones, as opposed to a kind of a rough, ragged, cheapy tourist rag in English. That's a different story, signifying a place that's pretty much off the tourist trail. Then there's a second way to find out if a place is on or kind of on the tourist trail. Again, just go on the internet, check out your destination, city, town, whatever. And if they've got a bar or two or 10 selling craft beer, man, you're on the gringo tourist trail. Because you know what? The average Latin, even the above average Latin, living off the Gringo Tourist Trail has no idea what craft beer is. And when you tell them it's homemade specialty beer that costs two or three times as much as their local brand, they think it's a bit nuts. Because, you know, Latins have extreme loyalty to their local beer, their national football / soccer team, and their choice of highly unsanitary street food. In fact, it always makes me laugh when I'm driving through certain Latin American countries and they've got food carts everywhere with big signs on them that say, Chucos. The specialty of the house? Greasy-ass mystery meat sandwiches. Absolutely slathered with margarine, mayonnaise, and a lot of other artery-choking ingredients. Of course, I wouldn't touch those things with a 10-foot pole, but every single group of Latins I've ever been out with, late at night anyway, get a kind of craving for that garbage, as some people get for midnight pizza, I guess. But the part that makes me laugh is the name of those food carts, Chuco, which in Spanish is a well-known slang term for dirty, unsanitary, and disgusting. Basically, the sign says it all. Step right up and get your disgusting food here. Which is why it's nice to know a little Spanish. So when your midnight crowd hones in on a food cart like that, you can say, no thanks, think I'll pass. But where was I? Oh yeah, talking about shoeshine guys all over the place in the central parks throughout Latin America. So there I was, sitting in the Central Park in Antigua, Guatemala, really nice and excellent people-watching area, by the way. Oh, and another thing, since I mentioned it's kind of getting gringo-wised, I should point out that there are more European tourists in Antigua, Guatemala than gringos, by far, which is a good thing. Adds a little touch of class and eclecticity, you know. Eclecticity, is that a word? Well, it is now. Sounds like a newly coined childhood psychiatric disorder. Anyway, because, you know, as harsh as this sounds, Europeans tend to be more educated, quieter, more introspective, and, well, just funnier looking and more tattooed up than most Americans. But I digress. Man, did I digress. Anyway, back in the Antigua Guatemala Central Park, as soon as I sat on the bench, a little guy ran up to me saying, "Shine, mister?" You know what that means, right? We're on or somewhat on the tourist trail, so get ready for gringo prices. I said, "How much?" He said, $1.50. I said, "Oh, is that right?" Then again, because I can dicker with these guys in Spanish, I said, look, in Guatemala City, in the Central Park, a park that's 10 times bigger than this Central Park because that's the capital, you can sit there all day watching people go by, great people watching too, and probably never see a single gringo. And you know how much the Lustre guys charge for a shine? 30 cents. So I'll tell you what, I'll give you 30 cents. And you know what he did? He shrugged his shoulders and said, sure, and did a great job. You get it? I hope so. So that's how it happens, drip by drip, little by little, as gringos trickle in. The locals, through no fault of their own, just charge what the traffic will bear. And they see that gringos don't dicker. They think it's a great deal to get a shoe shine for $1.50. Why? Because I know for a fact, even 30 years ago, back in downtown Chicago on Lakeshore Drive, there were little shoe shine chair setups in hotel districts and L train stations. And even back then, it cost anywhere from $3 to $5 to get your shoe shine. That was 30 years ago. So when a gringo hears $1.20, man, that's a hell of a deal. Oh, and back to that little group of indigenous ladies that kind of surrounded the gringas sitting on the bench next to me. I mentioned they've got two fallback positions when you buy something from them, and there's a bunch of other ones sitting around who didn't get the sale. The first being that one or more of them will say, well, you bought something from her, now you got to buy something from me. Yeah, right, that makes sense. Well, that second fallback position, I hear this all the time too, is that it'll be late afternoon and one of the ladies will say, mister, I didn't sell anything today. My family's got to eat. Buy something. Now, that's the hook that really grabs a gringo. Then they give you a sad look. It's enough to get even a tight-ass gringo to open his wallet. And that's why you'll often see gringos treating an indigenous lady or her kids or a family to a free meal. Nothing wrong with that either. But let me tell you a little story. A few months ago, I was sitting in a Central Park in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. Kind of hot, ugly, and dry there. Second biggest city in Honduras, almost 1 million people. Not a lot to like about the place, but there's a lot of ways for gringos to make money and find niches there. Anyway, I was in the Central Park, always a great people-watching place again. And since it's way off the Gringo Tourist Trail, no gringos to be found. Anyway, a young teenage indigenous girl, decked out in typical clothing, with her very well-behaved little sister and brother in tow, they tried to sell me some trinkets and stuff. And you know, since I'm living here in Latin America, I'm not a tourist. I'm not buying trinkets for the folks back home. Anyway, she wouldn't take no for an answer, and she kept following me around. And as predicted, she hit me with the fallback position. It was late afternoon. She said, In Spanish, of course, because believe me, few people in San Pedro Sula speak English. She said, it's been a bad day, I didn't sell anything, and my family's got to eat. Now, I noticed something unusual about her when she first walked up to me. She was wearing braces on her teeth. And you know, here in Latin America, only upper middle class and wealthy people can ever afford to have braces, even though I've priced them out down here with dentists and orthodontic specialists, and the price is anywhere from around $800 to $2,000 for a full complicated case that could take 2 or 3 years. But generally, braces for kids run around $800 to $1,000. Whereas up in the States, the average cost is from $5,000 to $10,000, depending if you want the traditional metal ones, the clear plastic ones, or even the tricked-out Hollywood convertible colors and designs. But either way, I was wondering how this indigenous girl came up with $800 minimum, which is big money down here for people used to making $200 or $300 a month. So I quizzed her. I said, you mean to say you didn't sell anything today? So you and your family are going to be hungry tonight? Then tell me, how is it that you have braces on your teeth? I caught her off guard. She got embarrassed a bit. She was, in the moment, speechless and never did give me an answer. Was it some do-gooder gringo or European who came through and decided she was the one to win the braces lottery? Is there a benevolent NGO out there whose mission is to fix the teeth of snaggletoothed locals? I kind of doubt it. Since orthodontic treatment takes years, you have to have many appointments, a lot of adjustments, and those do-gooders and NGOs, they blow in for a few weeks, build some outhouses, hand out some flashlights and water filters. Then, after a heavy sunburn and a few dozen mosquito bites, it's back to the 4-star hotel, massage, jacuzzi, Sunday brunch, and the next day, hello Cleveland and the Ladies Garden Club, where you'll be given that talk on the construction of solar outhouses in Latin America. Milk and cookies provided by Girl Scout Troop 416. But I digress, sorry about that. Anyway, in the end, the little indigenous girl with the braces had me stumped. How do you think she got those things? Any ideas? Oh, and speaking about the differences in being on and off the gringo tourist trail, how about this for a story? The other day I was driving through Guatemala City. It's a place well off the gringo tourist trail. And contrary to what you might think, they have some very high-end first-class subdivisions and neighborhoods. It's a city that's broken down into 25 neighborhood zones or districts. That's how most Latin cities are structured, and all you have to do is mention any particular zone in a Latin city to any one of the locals, and he or she will give you a very good rundown on what it's like to live in that area. Is it safe? Is it dangerous? Good shopping? Bad shopping? Dirty? Clean? Nicely or poorly manicured? Crowded? Quiet? Noisy? Whatever. Turns out every district or zone in any Latin American city has its own personality. Now, the other day I was driving through Zone 15, a very nice zone in Guatemala City. A lot of it pretty much high-end. A few first-world style malls, some nice high-rise residential towers, lots of gated guarded subdivisions, some of them very high-end, along with a few first-world hospitals, clinics, and doctor's offices, too. No gangs, no graffiti, no slums, none of that. Anyway, I'm driving down a nice, big, tree-lined boulevard in Zone 15, and suddenly I'm in a huge traffic jam. It's never like this. It's about 2 in the afternoon, so it's not noon or rush hour traffic, and I'm thinking, well, there's got to be some big road construction up ahead, or some kind of bad accident. So I'm inching along, getting closer and closer to the bottleneck, and I notice everyone's taking a right turn onto an auxiliary highway. But that's not the way I'm going straight. So finally, when I get to the source of the bottleneck, I realize all those cars turning right, causing that big jam, are high-end cars, SUVs, Mercedes, Jaguars, big black Tahoes and Suburbans that you know are filled with scumbag politicians, possibly a few upscale narcos and their bodyguards. Same difference, right? Then suddenly I was confronted with the source of the problem. Every one of these mostly high-end cars were in line at, get this, Latin America's very first, drumroll please, Krispy Kreme donut shop. Talk about making money hand over fist. And the funny thing is, the average Latin American has no idea what Krispy Kreme stands for or is, never knowing that everyone you eat gets you that much closer to a triple bypass. Though some say it's worth it. So then you just have to ask, why in the hell is it so popular? I mean, it's so popular, it's caused a huge traffic jam. Not just the day I was there. I understand it's been going on ever since the place opened 2 weeks ago. Well, wouldn't you know it, it's only the upper middle class, wealthy, and scumbag politicians who have the dough to travel back and forth to my jammy a couple times a year to go shopping, the ones that watch U.S. cable TV because they want to be part of all that, that's all the marketing Krispy Kreme needs. So the kind of Latinos you'll find in that line are extreme gringo wannabes with the money to have visited the States and know what Krispy Kremes are. Now remember, I'm talking about Guatemala City, one of the places in Latin America that's so far off the gringo tourist trail that you could walk around in a very busy area all day long and never see a gringo. And even if you're hanging around the international airport or in Zone 10 where most of the four-star first world hotels are, the only gringos you're going to see will be do-gooders. Yet Krispy Kremes are making a killing down here. So what does that say about finding your business niche? Oh, and just to give you an idea how gringo franchises flourish here in Latin America beyond anything you can imagine. Did you know that in Guatemala City alone, they've got over 100 Subway franchises? Of course, they've got all the usual suspects too. McDonald's, Kentucky Fried, Taco Bell, TGIF, IHOP. Not to mention all the well-known pizza franchises, even Dairy Queen and Chuck E. Cheese. Man, if I'm not being too retro, I just have to say, gag me with a spoon. So you might ask, was the guy that brought down this very first Krispy Kreme franchise to Latin America a brilliant business guy? Or perhaps a sugar and grease addict that needs a constant fix? Did he have inside info? Was it dumb luck? Well, he was definitely a chance taker. First guy in, always is. In any event, he should be able to retire in about 6 months. Provided those coronary arteries hold out. Oh, and by the way, I've never tasted a Krispy Kreme donut myself. Although all the while I've been down here, I've heard gringos and expats mention them a few times. However, I do remember back in the States, there were no Krispy Kreme franchises in the Chicagoland area. Oh, and by the way, I heard Krispy Kreme talk on the gringo grapevine the other day. You've heard me say you can get about 95% or more of all the things you can get up in the States, and what you can't get, you can order through Amazon. Well, I guess I failed to mention that 1 or 2% of things that are very hard to get include the perishables, like Krispy Kremes, which is why I guess there's such a big gringo grapevine buzz going on right now. To tell you the truth, I don't get it. All right, we're going to change gears and go in reverse just for a second here. Inquiries have been coming in asking me whether or not I'm going to give another Expat Insider Seminar in Latin America. Well, I'm setting up the dates right now. It'll be early in July 2018. We'll know the dates for sure in probably about a week. So if you're thinking about coming and want to get the latest information as it rolls out, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll put you on my early bird list and you'll start getting the info right away. So just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and put the words expat seminar in the subject line. Oh, and don't forget, if you really want to get down to the nitty-gritty details of setting up your plan B, don't forget to sign up for my Expat Essentials course. To get my free intro video, just go to theexpatfiles.com/academy. All right, last but not least, let's dip into that very big email bag. Just deleted something like 5,000 of them the other day. Man, you know, you can't keep them there forever. But believe it or not, I do read them all. All right, I'll skip to the good parts. It says, Dear Johnny, on one of your recent shows, you talked again about your favorite stealth money belt. Could you send me some info on that? And I did. Then he says, My wife and I are still living up north in California rather than Detroit, so it's not that bad. However, one of my wife's bugaboos about Latin living is the seemingly ubiquitous use of tile and concrete floors. It just kills her feet and hips. And once she was sick and fainted to the floor, and I was so glad she didn't whack her head. On her last vacation, her laptop slid and fell and got damaged, something that would probably never happen with wood or carpet. So I was wondering if you hear this problem from other people you meet and what might be done about it. Is it very expensive to replace tile with other materials, cork, wood, etc.? Must the old stuff be removed, or can you cover right over it? Signed, Fred. P.S. Johnny, I don't always agree with your political and economic viewpoints. One case in point is your recent reading of an op-ed in La Nación. Just because renewable power sources may be more expensive than non-renewables, that does not necessarily mean they shouldn't be used. And besides, the advantage to the ecology, more solar and wind are used, the lower the cost. And although public ownership of utilities often results in graft and corruption, the same is the case with private ownership. But you know, it's true, I always feel more free the minute I cross into Latin America, even Mexico. Suddenly it feels there's no big brother on your back at all. Anyway, Johnny, I have my libertarian streak too. Maybe just not as solid as yours. All right, thanks for that, Fred. My response? Yes, you can definitely have real wood or cork floors put in, and it goes right on top of the tile or concrete floor. Don't have to rip anything up. A lot easier on the hips and legs than tile and concrete, I'll grant you that. And only a little more expensive than tile. But why not do like so many older expats do, the ones who rent, don't own, so they don't have the option to do that kind of remodeling and install wood. Just get some really high-quality walking shoes, like Nike, New Balance, whatever. You really can't do better than that, but forget about getting carpet. First of all, Latins don't know how to deal with water, so you're always going to have leaks, moisture, and mildew. Believe me, if you have carpets, you'll have big troubles. Plus, all the bugs and critters absolutely love the warmth of carpets. And who needs that? Oh, and by the way, about utilities and power companies, etc., or anything being owned by the government, they're just always disasters, twice as expensive as they should be. And well, you know, you have to realize it's the private individual and private companies that invented the technology of power distribution and power generation. Governments only try to control it to feed off of you like a parasite. The fact is, governments hate it when you go off the grid, because then they can't tax you every little step along the way. Just have a look at your power bill. Meaning, as every engineer will tell you, if you turn things over to the government, there'll be no innovation at all. Sure, there's a lot of private industries that are corrupt, but mostly when there's no competition. And how'd that happen? Well, they got in bed with asswipes like the Obamas, Clintons, and Bushes. The fact is, when there's free and open competition in technology, the corrupt and inefficient companies go bankrupt or fall along the wayside. You know, when corruption and graft are uncovered in private industry, you almost always find there's some political payoffs, some government subsidies, or sweetheart deals involved somewhere. How do you think private companies get no-bid government contracts? Some government slug is getting a contribution or a kickback. Doesn't matter if it's the first or the third world. The problem is, in business and industry, there are just no level playing fields anymore. Government slugs, bureaucracies, and politicians infect everything they touch. That's my opinion, of course, but it seems only people who work in government and other associated maggotous enterprises want less capitalism, more government, and more taxes. Well, then why don't we just have the government run everything, like in Venezuela, Cuba, and the former Soviet states? Let's make sure we level the playing field and make everyone equally miserable. Except, of course, if you're in the higher ranks of government. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.